It was 1986, and the Fur Bible had come to its demise, and I was hanging around in London at this houseboat in Chelsea with these two girls. I had these two sisters, and it was kind of a central place where people were meeting up. A lot of bands were staying there, like Einstürzende Neubauten, and then Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and different people would float through. And it was a place of people congregated a lot and stayed. There was a lot of parties. And I was there one day with Mick Harvey, and he told me that the Bad Seeds were looking for a guitar player, that Barry Adamson wasn't going to go on tour with them, so he was going to play bass, and they were looking for a guitar player. And he asked me if I'd be interested to do it. I thought it was a really great idea. So I was a big fan. I'd known Nick for a long time. You know, known him since the birthday party, and Mick as well. So I was glad to accept his invitation. And so I got on a plane to Berlin and started rehearsing for the tour. And we are also, I think right before the tour, we were going to film for the Wim Wenders film Wings of Desire. And in the film, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds are playing at a concert. So we were playing ourselves. And they needed a live version of From Her to Eternity, live sounding, because the studio one was a bit too studio sounding. And also, they wanted it to be a live concert. And so I learned their version of the song, which was much more kind of a stronger, more live version. So we recorded that in the Hansa studio and proceeded to film the concert scene right on the border where the East meets West. And it was an old, God, I can't remember the name of the ballroom. It's this great old ballroom, but all bombed out, like the walls missing and stuff. And it was like a big hotel where a lot of diplomats stayed. It was a big fancy hotel, but it was all bombed out in the intact parts of the hotel. That was my kind of first experience with Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And it was really, really cool to see Wim Wenders and watch him working, because he really is like one of his films. He's really kind of slow moving and very thoughtful about everything, a kind of calm, observant type of person. He came up to me and, you know, was telling us, you know, directing us, and he came to me and he's like, "Oh, Kid Congo," he's like, "I've seen you before. I saw the Gun Club a bunch of times, and you know, I saw you at the Club Lingerie in Los Angeles and stuff." And I was really like impressed. It was great to land in Berlin too, because I had been in London for like a year or longer. And the whole experience was a bit oppressive in London. I don't know, just coming from being an American to there, the whole way of life and structure of the culture made me start to feel really kind of crushed under a foot or something. I really felt like I was not myself somehow. I felt like I talked too loud. I was weird. People thought I was Pakistani all the time. And, you know, I really felt racism, really, for the first time, I think, in my life. Although I had great friends there and I had a good time, and I still was, on the long term, not down with the whole cultural structure and class systems and racism and different things. And like I said before, I wasn't like really into this pop culture, having to have the new thing every 10 minutes happen, you know, the new pop sensation every 10 minutes, and the new trend and the new style of music and the new look and the new everything. So when I got to Berlin, I really felt like, you know, I can unbutton my shirt. You know, I don't speak the language. I'd been to Berlin before to play, but I'd never really spent any time there. And I immediately like felt really at home in the atmosphere there. It was quite strange. And I could see why Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds had, you know, staked a home there. It was like a place I found that everything kind of met up with each other. The film world met up with the rock world, met up with the dance world, met up with the the visual arts. People would do things together. And this was a couple years before the divided wall came down between East and West Berlin. So it was, you know, just West Berlin I was in. And so there was also that special feeling of some kind of isolation because you were just surrounded by Eastern Europe, you know, East Germany. And so you really got the feeling you were in a really special place. Yeah, so then we went on the Your Funeral, My Trial tour. I remember we did very little rehearsing and kind of learned on the road how the songs went. You know, it was a really good kind of experience because the last things I'd done were like the Legendary Stars Cowboy and the Fur Bible. And I was not really into these things. You know, they were fun, but I was starting to really feel like I was around people I was supposed to be around at the time, you know, and that the music was experimental music and that it was really reflecting the city of Berlin. I really could see that right away, you know, in the sound of the music and the approach to the music, that it was a bit cold, a little bit harsh and quite romantic. And fed my interest in being using the guitar as an expressive sort of instrument. Nick's songs are very narrative led, a lot of them written on piano. It was a very different approach again to things I'd done before. It made me have to reinvent another kind of style that I did. You know, I wasn't playing rock and roll music anymore here, you know, even though it has a lot of elements of rock in it and blues. It was not cliche. The beats were very offbeat and the time signatures were very strange time signatures I wasn't used to. And it was really good for me to have to fall into that. It was just definitely a really good, another learning experience. My band leader there was more Mick Harvey than anyone who would show me how stuff goes and like what the timings are. The other thing was that there was really a lot of freedom in what was going on. Everyone's individual ideas were welcomed in that band. And that's what I think Nick really wanted. That's why he chose such individuals, you know, to be in his band. And that's kind of was just very much the same of Jeffrey chose me because of he just met me and I didn't play anything. The Cramps chose me because I seemed to fit some kind of strange idea that they had, you know, and the same thing with the Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, that they're looking for is something that wasn't what everyone else was doing. And that's who they chose to be in their band. The creative process with the Bad Seeds seemed to be always very different and unpredictable. Usually it started out with drums, maybe piano or a guitar part that Nick or Mick would come up with. Then kind of me and Blixa and whoever else were left to fill in the blanks, really, and see what kind of sound would come up that would be good for the song. Because the first thing I did was learn songs they already were doing because I was filling in on a tour, so I was in just learning other people's parts. Sometimes stuff was pieced together and then left and come back to, and sometimes it was a band dynamic. But there actually wasn't any one process, really. Usually it was like, they do something. Okay, kid, you go do something. Okay, Blixa, you go do something. Show me what you got. And definitely Tender Prey was much more like that. I think later on, The Good Son was a little more structured. And it was the experimental era, the Berlin way, and very democratic. Mick and Nick, obviously, would have the last say-so and things, but it was a very kind of free environment. We were doing a lot of touring, and, you know, I took up residence in Berlin. I got there, and I decided I want to live here. And I was offered a place. I met Maria Zastro, who's the bartender at Risico, that big hangout bar, and somehow reminded me a little of New York somehow. I don't know why. Maybe it's because it was so kind of cosmopolitan in a weird way. A lot of the people I was with were cosmopolitan. And next to London, it really seemed like somewhere I could call home, and I ended up there in Berlin for 3 years, you know, without any desire to leave. Nick was really working hard at the time on his book, On the Ass Saw the Angel. So, like, he really just made music and wrote that book. I didn't really hang out with Nick so much, although I knew him well, and obviously we toured together, but at that point, I knew Anita much better, and Mick Harvey, and Thomas, and Roland Wolf. Actually, me and Roland Wolf were the new guys in the band, the keyboard player Roland Wolf, and so we bonded on that kind of level. If we weren't sure what we were doing there, but made our way in. Everyone else was just going along with what they had been doing. Berlin at the time was full of speed and drugs. That's a very druggy sort of record. I know Mick and Nick refer to it as a really black period in their lives. There was a lot of heaviness going on, mostly due to probably drug taking. Just life was very heavy, you know, at the time, like with relationships with different people. And there was a lot of influx of Australians moving, thinking the Bad Seeds path, Crime in the City solution, and just different people. A lot of Australian groups were moving to Berlin at the time because, like now, then it was even cheaper place to live and very free with the music process. I just come from London where it was all about success and the music industry and getting your picture in the paper and, you know, being on the latest trend, and that was just really the opposite. So after Tender Prey came out, we were doing a lot of touring. The Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds are very much a live touring kind of band. Always have been, still are. We toured all over the world, in like Australia, Japan, all of Europe, America. Yeah, the, our American tour, the film crew came and made the documentary, The God, Road to God Knows Where, Uli Schupel, who I recently saw. And that was a strange thing to see, you know, because when you're on tour, you're just being on tour, and that's your life, and that's a lifestyle in itself, where your only job is to get to the next place and play, really. You're just constantly on the move, something I've grown very comfortable with. You know, it was strange to see it all played back on film, you know, because you don't really know what you're like, and you don't know what touring is like. The cameras were always there. I guess it was like doing a reality TV show. And after a while, you just forgot that they were there, or you'd see them and be like, hey, you know, whatever, and you just do what you're doing. And they got some really candid stuff, you know, really great stuff. And I found that touring with Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds had some very overzealous, dedicated fans. I could really see that the band was really popular, but I could really see that it was going to go really, really popular. The dedication to an obsession with Nick, especially in the band, really was like pretty astonished at, like, you know, was to the point of stalking, threats of suicide, just really crazy, crazy, crazy fans. So I stayed in Berlin for like 3 years, and this time, actually, me and Jeffrey were keeping in contact, and we started up the Gun Club again, so I was really on the go. I was really doing back-to-back tours really a lot. My last year in Berlin, especially, I was hardly there because I was just on tour the whole time. The Bad Seeds started, we went to Brazil to play. Nick really fell in love with Brazil and really fell in love with a girl in Brazil. By this time, I had actually moved back to London. Nick and Mick had moved back to London, and I followed suit and got a house with Nick and Anita and in Clapham and Clapham Common. There we had like a 3-story house, and in the attic Nick had a piano, and that's there where he wrote all the songs for The Good Son. This time, actually, we left Berlin because drugs had really taken their toll and we really wanted out. Nick and Anita had gone into rehab, and I had started going to NA meetings and stopped taking drugs, and was trying to, you know, get myself together, because by the end of Berlin, I was really uninterested in being, even though this was probably the height of the most popular thing I'd done, I'd really lost interest. I was no longer excited about music. I was feeling really like turned to stone, really, in that way that heroin does to you. People were overdosing and dying, you know, in the scene, and I was seeing that people didn't care about it, and it really, I had this crazy moment of like, this is so fucked up, and this is not me, and what's happening, and you know, I was this crazy music fan, and you know, now I'm just this kind of jaded, you know, feeling nothing person, and it really scared me. So I had decided to move with Nick and Anita back to London, like a fresh start of things. And since they were going to be there anyway, it was, you know, it was logical sense. And so, like, it was at this time we went to Brazil to play. And it was at this time Nick met a girl who was to become the mother of his child. He was really taken with Brazil, as we all were. So we decided, Nick decided, that it would actually turn out to be cheaper to get a studio in Brazil and fly us all out there and stay there to record an album. So we went to Sao Paulo and stayed for 3 weeks making The Good Son, tracking it all. And that was a great, great time, great experience. I was sober and I was excited about making a record again. And the music was changing, you know, he was getting more songwritery, sort of. They were more song-like, you know. There was, although there was still experimental edge, the songs were a little more formed, I think, because he wrote them all on piano. He was going through a big change at the time as well. And so that was, you know, really a great experience being in Sao Paulo and being in Brazil. And it's just such a completely different atmosphere than Berlin or London, which was kind of cold and hard reality, and Brazil was just like beautiful and sunny, and you know, people were really nice, even though it's, you know, a lot of poverty and crime there, it still was okay with us. And yeah, it was a good time. Yeah, and Victor went with us, and Victor had been doing our live sound for a really long time. Tony had been doing it, and he was quite a crazy sort of guy. But then he went back to Australia, I think, and Victor stepped in. And that's, I guess that must have been like, Victor stepped in like that American tour, because he's in that documentary. So in making The Good Son, I really feel like that's like some of the best guitar stuff I did, even though it seems really minimal. Like I said, I think I started learning to play again. You know, it was very piano-led type of record, so the harsh guitars are at a minimum, but they're still there. It was a real, I think, transition from the harsh Berlin sound into something, whatever it was to become at the time. It's kind of strange when you're recording. I didn't really notice that the record was any different than any other record we were making. Yeah, I kind of had a little bit of a return to a kind of gun clubby sort of style of playing, and like, you know, melodies and rhythm and things, instead of just seeing what jagged edge I could put in to the songs. A lot of acoustical guitar, which McCarvey played all of, because you know, I don't want to play an acoustic guitar. Actually, we returned from Brazil to mix the album in Berlin, and while we were mixing the album was when the Berlin Wall came down. It was a really funny run-up to the whole thing, because, you know, the TV was on and my German's not really that great. Like, son Thomas kept running in saying, like, so-and-so resigned from the East German cabinet. And they're saying, and then, you know, the president resigned, and now the vice president resigned. And they were saying, now there's nobody there. They were saying that people were coming through the wall. And I remember we came out like at 6 a.m. or something, and there was like people, all these people wandering around, and people asking us if they could stay with us, because they weren't, because no one knew what was going on. They didn't know if they were going to be taken back. They didn't know if it was permanent or whatever. And then the next day I woke up to go to the studio, And I said, wow, it seems like there's a lot of people here. There was like a gazillion people in acid wash jeans in all the train stations, and everywhere you were, there was just crazy people. And you like realize that, wow, people are, you know, coming through. And, you know, it was a really crazy, crazy time. And it was like a circus. We were at Tritono's studio, which is actually really near one of the borders. So there was a lot of people coming through near there. And yeah, it was quite an exciting time. I remember it was our friend Maria's birthday, the very night of the first night. And she was having a birthday party at her house. And I remember she arrived going, look, I brought some East people with me. They're from the East. Give them a drink. So I'll always remember the event by the mixing of The Good Son. A lot of things were changing. In The Bad Seeds and in people's personal lives, my personal life, I was changing. We were all going through changes because we'd all got clean. With that comes a different viewpoint. You can start to reassess what you want to do and, you know, follow different desires. And as it turned out, Nick had fallen in love with the Brazilian girl. So his relationship with Anita ended, and that was traumatic thing. I had to bear witness to it because I was living in the same house. Whatever, that's their personal thing and not very much of my concern. But that was one event. I had a real desire to move back to the United States. I was going to move to either San Francisco or New York, but then I went to LA and got involved in a love affair and decided I'll move to LA. And that was over in 6 months and I was stuck there for a while. So then I was deciding, okay, maybe I'm going to move to Los Angeles. And I was staying there really a lot. And I was really getting busy, really busy with the Gun Club. And Mick just called me and said that they were, you know, trying to figure out what to do about touring for the record and stuff. And that they were trying to figure out, like, if they really needed all the people. Because I was, like, changing so much and bent on moving to Los Angeles, it didn't seem like a bad idea for me not to do the tour, not to be in the band, really. Because I, for one, had only joined to do one tour and ended up there for 3 years. And I was also having a real desire to do something on my own and something different again. You know, you'll see through these interviews that there's a 3-year cycle of my attention span with one project and other people's attention spans with me. He just said, what do you think? And I said, like, well, I think it's maybe a good idea I stay in Los Angeles then and just work on the Gun Club. We're getting increasingly more busy. And if you can't justify, you know, having two experimental guitarists in a not so experimental band anymore, then maybe that's a good thing. And then, you know, once again, McCarvey was going to change to be the guitarist, and so they went. Actually, that was a very amicable split, because I felt like I was kind of through and done what I could do with them, and I could see that it wasn't really needed, and I was quite busy enough with my band, with Jeffrey. And so that kind of was the end of that.